次。
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, members, and good morning to the department also. The agenda for today, the 20th of April 2016, is as follows. There's opening and welcome, apologies, adoption of agenda, and a briefing by the Honourable Member that you just arrived on private members' bill referred to this committee, and then the deliberations on that regulation. Followed by another briefing by the Department of Labor on the turnaround strategy of the compensation fund, deliberations on that presentation, and then the consideration of draft minutes of the 7th and 13th April 2016. Thank you, Chair. I have no apologies, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Honourable members, as this agenda has been read, we have Honourable Dudley with us, who is going to be presenting a private member's bill by herself and the committee. And all what you are going to do today is just to listen and ask questions if we have questions. But as a committee, we are not going to be discussing it today. Just for the presentation by Honourable Dadi to the committee. We have DG, you are also welcome, so that after Ms. Honourable Dadi, we are not wasting time. You are welcome with your officials. Yours today is to present to us the plan of how to improve or turn around the situation in compensation fund. And we are all welcome, and the visitors, I think there are more than one visitor, they are all welcome to the committee. Over to you, Mr. T. Oh, adoption. Oh, okay, sorry. What?
Thanks, Chair, I move for the adoption of the agenda. And as we do that, before a second comes, I just want to touch one area on housekeeping matters. Members of the meeting, today is the birthday of the chairperson of the committee. So can you stand and sing happy birthday for him? Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Lunga. Happy birthday to you. How old are you now? How old are you now? How old are you now? How old are you now?
Members, we also, I got it this morning.
Check. I want to check the proposal of adoption of the agenda.
But as the agenda has been adopted.
Thank you so much, Jay. Apologies for being a little late. I was waiting for some to print. I'm going to croak and squeak and see how it goes while I resort to whispering, if you don't mind. I don't normally sound like this. I will put through some of the thoughts that I think might be helpful. Has members had any documents, paperwork? Have they had the bill?
Members have documents.
Yes, they have the legislation. Okay. And then anything else that I teach you, you can download from my class. Right. So the Labor Laws Amendment Bill seeks to provide for parental leave, adoption leave, and commissioning parental leave. It also provides for the payment of parental benefits, as well as commissioning parental benefits from the Unemployment Insurance Fund. So this private member's bill, so this is the Labor Laws Amendment Bill, was drafted in line with the African Christian Democratic Party policy on family values, of course, the Green Paper on family, calls by COSATU that were becoming louder and louder in terms of media, and appeals that were made directly to the ACDP by fathers who felt strongly that provision should be made in law for paternity leave. Fathers, we understand, play an important role in the upbringing of their children. The ACDP is of the opinion that such a provision would facilitate early bonding between fathers and their children, and that stronger and healthier families would be one of the many potential benefits for society as a whole. Now, the White Paper on Family in South Africa for 2013, a court exploring the possibility of calling for the inclusion of paternity leave in the Basic Conditions of Employment Act and strengthening recognition of parenting and support for parents in the workplace, that was written in there by the Department of Social Development. Also there is, by the Department of Labor, ensuring that labor policies and laws support gender equity at the workplace, and they recommended the development and implementation of paternity leave. Now the bill which deals with parental leave and also provides for adoption and surrogacy leave was drafted in a manner to harmonize with current legislation and to ensure the provisions contained in the bill will pass constitutional muster. It is, however, important to note from the side of the ACDP, as I had to tell this to my party, the ACDP does not support, nor did in the past, support amendments to the Children's Act of 2005, which allowed for same-sex couples to adopt children. However, the way this legislation has been written, it applies to the law as it currently stands. There's no problem and no discrimination. The Basic Conditions of Employment Act provides that an employee may take 4 months paternity leave in respect of that employee's child, and this paternity leave is paid for by the Unemployment Insurance Fund. It further provides that an employee who is the father of the child may take 3 days family responsibility leave when that employee's child is born. Now, family responsibility leave is paid for by the employer. The 3 day family responsibility per year that fathers are entitled to is quickly exhausted as it also covers illnesses and deaths of family members. An employee entitled to adoption benefits from the Unemployment Insurance Fund, switch to adoption now, but there is no legal obligation on an employer to grant the adoption leave. So currently, adoption leave is a matter for negotiation between individual employees and employers, and it's a major obstacle in a way of encouraging adoption. And we do know that adoption figures have gone down, not even stayed the same, and we wanted them to go up. So we have a dire need for adoptions to actually take place, and anything that's in its way, we still should be taken care of. So neither the Basic Conditions of Employment Act nor the Unemployment Insurance Act make provision for leave nor payment of benefits where an employee has become a parent through a surrogate mother of agreement. So that's looking to the surrogacy. Important for the well-being of society and children, for both parents to play an active role in their lives. The consultation that I did with her, there was a letter to the UIF board and to NEDLAC, and NEDLAC invited me to come and present to them. I also had interaction with COSATU, our constituency, of course, at a national level and in the provinces. Then Mr. Blanche was one of those fathers who were acting on behalf of the fathers as well. I obviously used our media releases generally and social media as well as an avenue to put the information out there for people to respond to. And we did get some responses. Most of the responses were in favor and suggesting further additional days, numbers, etc. So it was just actually adding to and the reason that in discussions with Qatar, the reasons that we kept it fairly conservative in terms of moving forward is because obviously there are the financial costs and just a quick some of the things that have been put in other people's submissions: Cameroon, 10-day paid paternity leave, of which they are compulsory. In Australia, there's 14 paid days. In Kenya, there's 14 paid days. In Sweden, there's a combined 450 days leave for the parents to share. There's information here that came by Henry to Blanche about the divorce rate being up and this having a social and financial implication for families, and which the further research actually shows helps in that situation. The London School of Economics research found that divorce rates lower in families where husbands help with housework and childcare. In Sweden, couples 30% less likely to separate if the father took more than 2 weeks leave to care for his first child. 120 or more days leave during the 1990s developed closer emotional relationships with children and felt more responsible for childcare after the leave period was over. These are just some of the things that will be in the document, and you can refer to those. In Norway, two in-depth studies of leave sharing couples found that when fathers take leave, there is a redefinition and redistribution of tasks at home and the development of competence in childcare. Just an interesting sideline, Richard Branson has a new policy of 12 months paternity leave. Employees must have been with Virgin for more than 4 years to receive paternity leave or maternity leave pay of 100%, and of course lower for every year they've been there in their time. Netflix USA, unlimited parental leave for the first year of a child's life on full salary. They've seen that people tend to perform better at work when they're not worrying at home. Virgin allows staff to take as much time off as they want, provided that their team is up to date on projects, etc., and it's not going to interfere with the business. Financial implications for the state. There will be financial implications. In particular, the Unemployment Insurance Fund, which will be required to pay the new benefits envisaged in this bill. This bill should be dealt with in terms of procedure established by Section 75 of the Constitution, since it contains no provisions which the procedure set out in Section 74, 76 of the Constitution applies. It was also deemed not necessary to refer this bill to the National House of Judicial Leaders, and it doesn't contain provisions pertaining to customary law or customs of judicial communities. So now there are sections in the bill which people that, you know, haven't gone through the bill that you have seen that we've kept in line, for example, with the adoption leave. We've kept it in line with existing legislation, so it applies only to a child of 2 years and under. Of course, the ideal would be that that would apply to a child even 18 years, where bonding could possibly be more important, but we felt perhaps this is a starting point, and that would be something for you to discuss in your committee, but the starting point and the minimum would be to at least provide for what is already in the legislation. So should I leave it there and perhaps have questions at this point?
Thank you, Honourable Dudley. This presentation, members from the Honourable, and indeed this presentation was sent to us in advance, so we have time to look for it. It is detailed, well explained. If there are any questions or clarities that the members would want to ask, remember that we are not discussing it, only where you think that the clarity can only come from Ms. Dudley in what she was presenting. Otherwise, it is not our day for discussion. Members, Honorable Bakrain, Honorable Loliwe, and Honorable Police, in that order.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I apologize for coming in a little bit late. I apologize to Honourable Dudley. I'm sorry about that. I have read the documentation, and I thank you for bringing this to the House. I have a couple of questions. Obviously, one needs to do a proper assessment. I don't know if Honourable Dudley has actually done that as to what the costs will be, first of all, to the UIF and the states, but second of all, to the companies. And what will the cost be, and what will be the impact on productivity? And we need to obviously take it also back to productivity as a, to see what they have to say. That's the first question. The second one is, very different to maternity, where you know who the mother is, paternity is a particular problem because, first of all, a man may father a child with many women. At what point do we, and maybe the Honourable Dutty's thought this all through, but at what point do we actually say that you've had four kids in 1 year with four different women? And when you cut off, at what point you cut off the paternity leave? What happens if a father is saying he's challenging the paternity but claiming paternity leave from his employer? Those sort of questions become quite vexed and problematic here in South Africa, and I'd like to hear from Honourable Zandi as to what the research is on this, because we know that fathers do father many kids from many liaisons, and sometimes from people whom they've only met for one night. I'm not pointing fingers at men, but I'm saying this is a reality. And of course, there's the final one, which is, and it's a problematic one, and I don't know the answer to it, but there seems to be, when you do claim from the UIF, there seems to be some sort of encouragement there to father as many children as possible. We know that people do have kids. Some mothers do to get claims of that. Unfortunately, that has been an experience. We know about that. Would we see that from the fathers as well? Thank you for that. I have many other questions, but maybe this is not the right time and place to ask it. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. For myself, what did you say about the one night? And
And my father, a child after one night stand, can he still claim his paternity leave?
Thanks, Chair. I have only two questions. One is to say, what if the father does not have the credits that are requirement for IF to be paid out? The second one is to say, in the Swedish practice, is the 480 for all the kids that one can have, or for how many confinements? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Olive.
Thanks, Chairperson, and thanks to the Honourable Dudley. I can see she's done a lot of work, and we always appreciate it when somebody comes to our committee well prepared, having done a lot of work. We are cognizant of the international trends, and the trend internationally, even at the ILO, is to move away from maternity leave to a parental leave, and we're supportive of that. But there are lots of technical questions in this particular presentation. The first one that I have is, it just arrived from a comment made by the Honourable Dudley about same-sex couples. I'm obviously a gay man, and I'll be married in the next 2 years. I don't know whether or not I would want to adopt children, but if the Honourable Dudley is saying that she would support my right to adopt children as a gay man, or not, because she gave two different statements and I was not sure what the actual position is. Would this bill support my rights? Would ACDP support my rights? I'm not sure. And then, in terms of the costing, there are, as my colleague pointed out, some important questions. Normally when we present a private member's bill, there's a line which says, what's the economic impact of this bill? And we just need to understand what the economic impact is of this bill. The GAS policy would be to support parental leave and adoption leave on condition that we know what the cost is and that it is affordable. So we would support it. But what studies have been done in terms of the cost to the UIF and the cost to employers, what are the financial impacts? And then also the other question is not quite the same as my colleagues, but a similar one. If you have two parents applying for parental leave, what are the controls in that regard? Are both parents entitled to apply for parental leave simultaneously? Can it only be one? If it's only one, how do you control that? The husband could apply for parental leave at the one company, and the wife could apply for leave at the other company for the same period, for the same purpose. Now, I'm not talking about the short couple of days around the birth of a child or the adoption of the child, but there are longer maternity benefits, which we need to consider when we talk now about parental leave, because fathers now may also be entitled, and what are the implications in terms of that, and how does a company control that if both parents are taking leave for extended periods? Is there a mechanism to make sure that you don't have double dipping? You know, in Britain there's a rule about how fathers and mothers of children take that leave. They can't both be off for extended periods of months. There are controls, and what controls will there be in place with this particular bill to ensure that we don't have everybody off at the same time for these various periods? I think that's all my questions for now. Thanks to you, Rosie.
Thank you, Member. No more questions. Member, okay. There's one. Honorable Honorable Francis.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've been scrutinizing, but I'm not sure if I'm missing the part on possible parental leave with regards to the stillborn or a miscarriage in the third trimester. Can the Honourable Member please elaborate on that one? She has taken that into consideration.
Thank you, members. Over to you, Honourable Dodis.
Thank you. In answering some of these questions, I'm going to refer to this document, which you may not have yet. I'm wondering if anybody could hand it to members who may want to refer to it. Thanks. Costs and the economic impact of the bill. When I presented to NEDVAC, obviously I was aware that business and government would be the most wary. I had lots of interaction with Kasachi. The business didn't seem to have anything in particular to say, and I explained to them. Political party like the African Christian Democratic Party has extremely limited resources. So the kind of research that we would have done would have severe limitations. So I'm presenting to you what we have been able to do. On the assumption that government, when you have your hearings, at least other business, when you have your hearings, will be able to bring that kind of information, and others who have got more in-depth information on that. I'm also appealing to the department and to parties who have more resources to be able to access the deeper information in terms of the impact that it could have financially. I just know that it is a trend more and more, particularly where it's skilled labor, of course, that it is a trend to go more on the very extreme side of rental leave. And that would be companies who are making huge amounts of money and just have decided that it is good for them to include this parental leave. So for them, the research is there, and I'm sure that we can access it, and the committee can access that information. And so the largest appeal would be to the committee to have the researchers look into that side of it, so that we can be well informed. On the situation of, I think the government, the department will look into this. Obviously, they will know it will mainly affect them in terms of UIF, and I think that's something they could easily quantify and bring to the committee. In terms of fathers fathering many children in 1 year, the legislation does look to this being a per annum thing, so you couldn't apply more than once a year. It is also a safeguard that if the woman who had the child says that that father makes a slight complaint that that father is not there bonding with the child, that father will not qualify for applying for leave. So it is specific to that, and that would have to be it. The other thing is, unlikely, the department is unlikely, because the Treasury will decide how much of a percentage of a person's pay they would get. So it won't be a full pay, which means that anyone taking that leave is likely to be dedicated to the purpose, because they will lose out in terms of full pay. So it's not likely to be used very casually if people have a job that they regard as a job worth having and pay worth getting. So there are those kind of safeguards written into the legislation.
how many confinements, you know, the maternity is simple. Adopting, I don't think that you could speed it up to adopting too many children in 1 year, because I'm pretty sure the process is very long, but everything's really relevant to an annual application for the leave. Same-sex couples, the ACDP, you know, as the ACDC, do not support adoption in terms of, did not support adoption in terms of homosexual couples, and I don't foresee them doing so in the near future, but they fully accept that it is the law. And obviously I did have some complaints in taking this legislation to them, but I was really very concerned that this should not become an LGBT issue, because it's an important issue we need socially. So I took and approached this piece of legislation from the point of view of how the law stands today, and applied it exactly in terms of the laws we have now. And so that there is no discrimination, it's clearly looking at everyone, and obviously starting with the use of paternal leave rather than falling into the paternity and maternity thing. So it should be from our, from the scrutiny we put in place there, it should not be discriminating against anyone in terms of others. So two parents applying for parental leave, would it really happen, because maternity leave is simple, that's being provided for, there's the 4 months and the 10 days, and now we're suggesting the 10 days. So it would be, so if you had plenty of husbands, there would only be one who could apply in the situation for the 10 days paternity leave. So that's to do with when a child is actually, a woman gives birth to a child and she takes her maternity leave. In a situation of adopting, if you choose to either take the 10 days or the 10 weeks, but I've left the purpose open so that a person can decide who's taking the 10 days and who's taking the 10 weeks. So it doesn't have to be someone who identifies themselves as a mother or a father or anything specific. Because even in terms of women, there may be a woman in a particular kind of career that it doesn't suit her to take 10 weeks. She would take 10 days and her husband would take the 10 weeks. In any other kind of situation, like for example, gay or lesbian couples, and they would decide who would apply for the 10 weeks and who would apply for the 10 days, probably in line with what kind of job they have, who earns what and how much loss there would be in terms of the percentage salary reduction. And some of this might answer some of the other questions. The policy stance is that one of the adoptive parents should also be entitled to adoption leave of 10 weeks. Now, this amendment provides that a person is entitled to adoption leave of 10 weeks. It aligns this to the requirements set out in Unemployment Insurance Act, that the adoption leave should only be in relation to a child which is below 2 years, and that was just something I was mentioning earlier. So, although ideally we would fully support if it was a child older than 2 years, we've got a feeling that the department would not necessarily buy into it at this particular stage, although it is an ideal that we should perhaps look towards. The rationale for giving the 10 weeks as opposed to 4 months, which is applicable to maternity leave, is that an adoptive parent need not recover from giving birth. Now, in Section 25(4) of the Basic Condition of Employment Act, it provides that a person who has a miscarriage, and that would be during a third trimester, or who bears a stillborn child, is entitled to 6 weeks maternity leave, which commences from a miscarriage or stillbirth. And the period for adoption leave was therefore shortened to exclude the period that catered for that recovery over birth. So we base the recovery of birth on what is already in legislation in terms of recovery of from a parish or still leaving the portion that would be bodying with child. So I think that covers most of the questions. And that, by the way, on the document that we handed out, just in terms of each clause, it gives explanation of what the thinking was behind that clause. And so you'll find those explanations in that document.
Follow-up questions? A lot of
questions? Thanks to the new document that we've just been given, it refers to legal advisors' comments. Is that parliamentary legal advisor or is that the ACDP own legal advisor? I'm not sure who this person is that is the legal advisor on this document.
It is the parliamentary legal advisor.
Seeing that there are no hands there, I should thank you for giving further explanation in what you have said to us for the statement. The committee then will take the process forward in the legal way. Thank you so much.
Would anybody like to download from her, or should I ask the teachers to send to you and you can pass on?
Yes, the committee secretaries will, with the secretary, they will liaise with each other.
Just to say thank you very much, and if anybody, corporates or bodies, could make use of me at any time, hopefully when I'm not speaking from coaching, that will be a great pleasure. But I'm sure that the departments and the committees research are going to be extremely helpful, and I will send everything that we have.
Thank you so much, sister. Just a
question for the committee, not for Dudley. There was that gentleman, Henry, who emailed us all the presentation about this topic. He wanted to address the committee, not right now, but when we deliberate, should we not invite that person to give us their view?
Okay, if the question is not asked from you, Mr. Lee, he is very clear that he's asking the committee, can we give you that question when we discuss this bill, this amendment, then that question can arise.
Thank you,
Honorable Dudley. Members of Parliament, any apology that comes in the meeting, when the meeting is started, it's not an apology. Members know the right thing to do. When they are not going to be here, they must send a message to the committee secretary, and that message, if someone has no access to email or writing at that stage, but the courtesy, the person must call in advance, long before, the day before, you know that you're not going to be here. If it's the morning, you must call in the morning. And you must do it yourself to the committee secretary. So that's the rule. Is the department ready? Can we go? Over to you, DG. We have welcomed you.
Thank you so much, Chairperson, and good morning to the Chairperson and the honorable members. Just before I start, I would like to introduce the colleagues that I'm with. I'm with Mr. Viomhart, who is the Compensation Fund Commissioner. Mr. Tando Headbush, who is the Project Manager of Finance, and also the Acting Chief Financial Officer of the Compensation Fund. Ms. Lungisa Mandela, who is the CEO of the fund. Ms. Tindile Makubu, who is the HR Director. Mr. Masharara, who is the Communications Officer from the Department. Mr. Eric Nyagemba, the PLO. Ministry. Ms. Matapelo Mataboche was also the PLO for the department, and Advocate Gege from the DG's office, Ms. Mataboche. I think those are the people that accompany the company industry, so to say.
Thank you. You may proceed.
Thank you, sir. The presentation will cover the following. We'll give just a background. We'll do the analysis of the environment, the objectives of the action plan, the pillars of the action plan, the initiative in the action plan, the progress report on the action plan, progress on processing of claims, and then we'll conclude. The compensation fund has been receiving negative spotlights from NIDA and another key stakeholders due to its service delivery records. In order to restore reputation and improve the service delivery records, the fund has developed an action plan which will serve as a blueprint for the service delivery improvement initiatives. The action plan was developed by management of the fund in June 2015 and implementation started on the 1st of July 2015. The action plan was submitted to the Standing Committee on Public Accounts and Results during the appearance of the fund at the committee in June 2015. The action plan is not a replacement for the current strategic plan and annual documents plan of the fund, but it's a document that will enhance the pursuit of the objectives as outlined in this presentation. The analysis of the environment and the compensation part. Firstly, we would like to look at the financial management issues. Poor quality of information used for financial reporting, the inability to produce accurate monthly financial statements, the inability to carry out some of the financial management functions on the financial system, non-compliance to supply chain management policies and regulations, resulting in high number of financial misconduct cases. A high number of AGs, audit findings, but have not been dealt with over a number of years. Inadequate capacity in the sector to correct financial management. On the administration, the issues are communication within the fund, oversight committees highly involved in operational management of the fund, organized structures for management interaction are in existence but not fully functional. Consultants engaged with duplicated scope in some cases and no effective skills transfer. Inadequate ICT environment thus contributing to poor system deployment, poor record management processes. On service delivery issues, inadequate ICT infrastructure resulting in one, volumes of unpaid medical claims, including legal challenges. Two, infrequent payment of benefits. Refusal by medical providers to assist our clients. Risk of over-reliance on ICT service provider for the claim systems. And here we're referring to the licensee of the fund, which is the Rand Mutual Association. The lack of integration of the systems of the fund allows for seamless reporting and monitoring of performance. Medical service providers who disapplied the fund system for own advantage, unregulated and undefined involvement of third parties in the claims process. Claims data is given through the systems, what we call claims, the ICM and UMEDRUG. Limited medical professionals for assessment of medical claims. Inadequate training on the systems of the fund. People issues, low staff morale, unintended due to unintended consequences of decentralization and relations between staff and management that were at the all-time low. Breakdown in relationship between organized labor and management, resulting in a lack of trust. Side operations among the different units of funds, lack of accountability, no consequences. Poor change management efforts for all transformation projects, including systems deployment, general unhappiness with salary levels in the organization, poor management of personal development plans. I indicated earlier on the main objective of the action plan to put in place basic charging assist in improving the service delivery performance in the fund, increasing the efficiency of the fund's overall administration, financial management and operations, concerning the reputation of the fund. Basically, going back to basics. The following are the pillars of the action plan. One is the financial administration, customer focus on service delivery improvement, people management, internal business process and administration. So those are the four pillars of the action plan. If you look at the financial administration, the focus is on addressing the root causes of the audit disclaimers and improving the financial management capacity in the funds. I think we, during the last appearance before the committee, when we presented the budget of the compensation funds and the strat plan, we indicated that our focus is on really looking at the root causes of the challenges that we experience with regards to financial administration. On customer focus and service delivery improvement, focus on improving the customer and stakeholder experience in the funds. And I think currently, when people call the compensation funds, they are sent from pillar posts. So what we're trying to put together here is a system where if a call is lost, there's a response to the client immediately, so the client is aware of the status of his or her claim that has been lost. Internal business process and administration focus on improving the administrative efficiencies of the compensation fund. And people management focus on improving the service delivery environment of the fund. We have a view that you can't expect employees to be productive in an environment that does not enable them to be productive. So we're addressing all the issues relating to people issues which leave employees to be demoralized, and some of them take long sick leaves, generally want to improve the performance of the fund. The initiatives that are in the action plan have been categorized into short, medium, and long-term goals, depending on the plan and also depending on the resources requirements. So we have a short term, which we expected to be completed by the 31st of March 2016. Our medium term objectives or goals are to be completed by the 30th of June 2016, our long term by the 30th of April 2017. The progress on the short-term activities, we are currently sitting at 74%, and in progress is 26%. So the 17 activities that are in progress were moved to medium-term due to high dependence on some of the projects currently taking place in the funds. So if you look at the financial administration, the revision of the employer assessment model, loading and reduction of assessment targets, implementing employee discount, improving debt collection, correcting the interest and penalty functionality and prior year figures, approval of financial policies, clearance of suspense accounts and contributions, finalizing the merit rates, improving the bulk payment processes on Infoco, building capacity within the financial management unit, clearing of long outstanding constellation items, correction of prior open vouchers, automate bank reconciliation on ability. On the customer focus and service delivery improvement, we're focusing on making sure that we participate in the Department of Health contracts for supply of chronic medication, engagement with hospitals, health associations, and key stakeholders to improve relations. Develop and implement return to work program, development of the rehabilitation and reintegration of injured employees,
establishment of a panel of experts on the post-traumatic stress disorder, restructuring of the query resolution process to improve the turnaround time for customer queries and complaints, on internal business process, we want to restructure the employer registration and compliance function to align to core business, eradicating claims backlog at operations, improving functional knowledge of team through multi-skilling, allocating product team to process open items from the shelf system, the filling of medical codes at provincial offices, performing independent quality assurance on medical equipment so that it will meet the business requirements, improving hospital case management to introduce efficiency, implementing the CCMA case management system for hearings, proceedings and objection matters, implementing the fraud prevention and detection measures, develop and implement business continuity program. On people management, skills audit for staff performing implementation functions at both national and provincial offices, implementing change management on current projects, developing change management framework for the funds, adhere and implementation of performance management policies, enhancing training development, improving internal and external communication, assess the impact of decentralization on staff, embark on project for the review of organizational structure. How far are we in terms of the implementation? On the financial administration, just zooming on the outputs management of, which is the management of revenue, we identified six initiatives, and out of that we decided on 12 activities, and the progress to date is that out of those 12, 9 are in progress, and we've completed 3 activities. Financial policies are implemented, we've finalized that. Unallocated receipts appeared. We had one initiative identified, 2 activities planned to date, and 2 are in progress. We have not yet completed that activity. The payment of merit wage, that has been finalized. The daily payment of benefits, with 4 activities planned, 3 are in progress, and 1 has been completed. On the financial management capacity, we've finalized that. I think we've appointed everybody that we needed to appoint there. Reconciliation, financial transaction, we identified 4 initiatives, and out of that, we identified 4 activities. To date, 4 are in progress. So in essence, of the number of initiatives that we thought of, which are 14, we had 26 identified activities linked to that, and 18 are in progress, and we completed 8 of those activities. I'll explain the reason why on the 8 of the activities. So to date, the research was conducted on the correct accounting treatment of funds levies, and this resulted in the development of revenue management position paper that will be used for the development of accounting policies and business processes on revenue management. The dimension data has been appointed to perform all enhancements identified in the revenue management pillar. They have already started with all the projects. The employer discount functionality was first deliverable. It was launched in February 2016. As a result, the fund has now been able to identify 211 million discounts that were due to employers. These discounts are being paid out to employers. Merit rebates were gazetted on the 31st of August, and the gazette was followed up by newspaper adverts. Rebates that were due to employers have now been processed, and 15 million was claimed by employers, while 10 million has been unclaimed and now transferred to reserves. An interim ICT infrastructure solution for the fund claim management system has been implemented, but a longer-term solution is being sought. The interim solution has yielded good results on the performance of the system. Capacity and financial management has been enhanced with the appointment of sufficiently skilled personnel in the key areas within the financial management unit,
Associates Directors, Financial Reporting, Financial Control, and Income, as well as an acting Chief Financial Officer. All enhancements planned for Metalco, the claims processing system, to improve processing and payments of benefits are in progress. Some functionality are in testing phase. To date, the following enhancements have been delivered. The jubilee invoice checks, you will see that inside the receipt, for example. The payment process for legal claims, infrastructure upgrades, the listing reports, pensions application, reports. This is an example that we're referring to, Chairperson and honorable members, the examples of duplicate invoices detected and deleted. Here we're making an example of one company called Comsol. This is the deleted duplicates, which amounted to that 201 million. These are duplicate invoices which amounted to, what's that, 1.8 million. Example of invoices paid, since August 2014 to March 2016, we take one third-party company called Comsol. Invoices amount to 904 million, just under a billion. The authorized payment of 852 and the amount paid is 852. From April 2015 to March 2016, again, the same company, Comsol, invoices amount to 652 million were authorized and paid. So the story that the compensation fund is not paying the service providers is not entirely correct. On customer focus and service delivery improvements, let me just get to this slide. I'd like to also stress a point here, that one of the reasons that in some instances we are unable to pay service providers is because of these duplicate invoices. So what happens is that some of these third-party companies will then go to court and ask the lack of default judgment. Now, obviously, if you get a court order, you must still look at the claim, adjudicate the claim, accept liability, and reject those that you think you should not be taking liability on, and then process the claims. Now, if you have duplicates, it makes life very difficult for the funds because they clog the system. And this is the fight that we have with the third-party companies, because they say, no, they have not submitted duplicates. And we can show from the system that these are duplicated claims. Customer focus on service delivery improvements. We, on effective supply of chronic medication to COVID patients, we identified one initiative and planned one, and that is progress. Improving relations with hospital and health associations. Even though we indicate that it's been complicated, and it's an ongoing matter because you still need to maintain and sustain the relations that you have fostered with these stakeholders. Rehabilitation and return to work policy. We identified two initiatives. We have planned two activities out of that, and there's one activity that has not been started, and one is in progress. Deal effectively with post-traumatic stress disorder. We identified one initiative, we planned two activities, and that has been completed also with an asterisk indicating that it's an ongoing process. Improving the reputation of the fund, we identified two initiatives here, we planned further activities, spending from that.
and 2 in progress, and 3 have been completed. So of the 7 initiatives, we have 10 activities linked to that, and only 1 that has not been started, 4 in progress, 7 have been completed. In essence, the fund has decided to go on own tender instead of using Department of Health contracts. The business case has been approved. A request for proposal was published in March 2016. An appointment will be made by end of May 2016. There has been significant progress made by hospital growth in addressing the challenges, and this has contributed to a substantial increase in medical benefits paid for a period up to March 2016. An excess of $5 billion has been paid for medical compensation pension benefits. The fund is interacting with various associations and registration bodies to develop a working relationship. Discussions already held with institutions like SAICA and SAMA. Discussions are ongoing on how we will collaborate on outreach programs to the members. A post-traumatic stress disorder panel of experts has been appointed, and the work of the committee has started. This will ease the problems associated with claims on PTSD, particularly in the frontier employer space. Ongoing educational campaigns are taking place on the different media platforms to educate clients on the processes and systems of the fund. The process is underway to develop a return to work and rehabilitation policy with the assistance of the German Social Accident Insurance Agency. This process will be followed by a pilot case. A new client resolution team process has been put in place to deal quickly with clients' inquiries and complaints. A multidisciplinary team for each province has been put together. On internal business processes administration, we've identified core business real-time integration. We've identified one initiative left. There's 2 activities, and we have not started one. The one is in progress. Improve the rate of processing compensation benefits and medical claims. We identified 5 initiatives here. We've planned 8 activities. We started in 0 activities in progress, 5 completed, 3. Effective management and monitoring of hospitals benefits to reduce costs. We've identified 1 initiative. That one activity, and that activity is in progress. Effective management of legal services, plans one activity, and that activity is in progress. Effective risk management, identified 2 initiatives, plans 6 activities linked to that, 5 activities are in progress, and 1 is completed. So in essence, out of 10 initiatives, we linked 18 planned activities. 1 has not started. 39 progress. 4 has been completed. Here's the progress. Professional nurses and doctors appointed, and their contracts are effective from 1st February 2015. Proceeds with adjudication of medical claims and pre-authorizations. The additional nurses and doctors were in the process of being appointed to add the current numbers. Enhancements have been done in Metro, which were released in the last quarter of the financial year. But there remain a large number of enhancements still outstanding. We have started a process to fill the permanent medical doctor and medical case manager's posts. Interviews for the provinces were finalized in February 2016. Some of the medical practitioners have already commenced work. Declaration of interest policy has been approved for implementation from April 2016, where all staff will be expected to declare their financial and business interests. The BCM policy has been approved by the Director General and process is underway to finalize the strategy. On people management, look at the output competency gaps addressed. 1 initiative, plan 5. 4 in progress and 1 completed. Improving organizational culture, 5 initiatives, with 29 activities out of that. Activities in progress, 16. Completed activities, 11. Improve staff morale, and one initiative out of that, nine activities planned, and two activities in progress, seven have been completed. Revised and approved organizational structure, one initiative, two planned activities, and those activities are in progress. So it means that out of the eight initiatives, we have 45 activities linked to that, and only two have not commenced, 24 in progress, and 19 have been completed. So on the skills audit on staff at the fund has been completed, and the skills levels, gaps, and required competences have been identified. The fund is in the process of developing an implementation plan for corrective action. The change management project to assess the impact of previous interventions and develop a new framework for the fund is underway. The project will be concluded at the end of the current 2016. Guidelines on transfer requests, wellness issues, and staff complaints for the decentralized staff developed and communicated all staff and being implemented. Employee health and wellness unit is assisting staff that are negatively affected by the consequences of change and a report on how to deal with issues emanating from the decentralization process has been completed, and recommended options are being considered. The process to review the functional structure of the fund has commenced, with a view to organize the fund into three business units as a way to improve the speed with which we deliver the service. The progress on claims processing to date. And for 2015-16, medical payments to date, just under 3 billion, 2.8. And the compensation benefits in 2014-15, we paid 103 million, and now we are, for 2015-16, we are 137 million. For pension payouts, pension payments, sorry, in 2014-15, we paid 671 million. For 2015-16, we paid 968 million. In total, for 2014-15, the compensation bond paid just over 2 billion, and in 2015-16, we paid just under 4 billion. From the pie charts, the medical payments takes the biggest chunk, which is at 1.7%. The compensation, so the pension payments follows it. And lastly, your compensation benefits, which is 3.5% of the total amount paid. And the fund has started to make significant progress with regards to the processing of claims. This is how we fared, if you look at it in terms of this graph. And the point we're trying to raise here, sir, from an honorable member, is that in 2014-15, what we picked up was that even though we started in April paying reasonably well, up until May, we started noticing a decline in terms of payments, and up until August, where there wasn't any payment made from August up until October, and then we started picking up issues as a result of the enhancements that were supposed to have been made into the system, and the slowness of the system and the problems related to the availability of the system when officials wanted to use it. And we then started picking up around November, December, January 2015, and then we picked up some problems again. But if you compare that with 2015-16, where we started slowly, we picked it up, I think we picked around August, around September, October, where we pay a region of about 450 million. And then we went down again, and then we peaked again around February, and then we slipped down around March. And around March, you always see this, because it has to do with the end of the year, closing the books and all that, and the reconciliation that must be done. On compensation benefits, we experienced almost the same situation where we were paying around 20 million. Went straight down to not paying around August, September, October, November. We picked up, but you'll notice that even when we picked up, we couldn't pay at the same rate, at the same level that we're paying. And we went down February, and we picked up again in March. For 2015-16, even though we started at around 15 million, around 8 or so, 8 million, we went down in low, but we get to this level, which is about close to 16-17. We went down to 50, around 15, and now switching at around 15, it could be 12-15 million. The pension payouts, we seem to have stabilized this one, where you can see now that we have we placed flat rates. We have normalized the situation here, and hopefully it will remain normalized. These are just an example of medical claims that have been deleted, just emphasize the point made earlier on, that in some instances we have to delete duplicate claims. Because if we don't delete them, they clog the system. In conclusion, Chairperson, honorable members, ICT remains one of the biggest dependencies for the success of the turnaround we have mentioned at the first, and we hope delays in this area will contribute negatively to improve performance. That's why we are doing whatever we can to make sure that at the end of probably August, which is the compensation plan, we'll have its own ICT, we'll have its own system, place processing system. We have started a significant number of the identified projects, and we will continue to monitor implementations to ensure that we meet the deadlines of check for our funds. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, PG. We have listened to an elaborated plan of how things are currently in the compensation fund since the DG has spoken to us before, and now he is coming with another detailed plan that shows the status of the situation there, and I think the plan, we listen to the plan and the plan is dictated, but the members have the right to interrogate the plan and ask questions where it is not clear. I just want to free the legal advisors. We won't be dealing with any issues that the committee will need you today. Both of them are here. Members, Honorable Bahrain, Honorable Lollywood, Honorable Olive, Honorable Van Stavik, in that order.
May I go in and check? Thank you.
cure that, we have plans and plans and plans, and I obviously wait to see the results. Plans are all very well and probably quite easy to draw up. It's results which tell us the proof of the pudding is in the eating, as opposed to the actual picture of the pudding. We've seen now the picture of another pudding. We've had plans, as my chair pointed out, we've had many plans in the past. So much so, it comes as a stark reality to me to see that 4 months, on some of your graphs, there were no payments to the whole of South Africa. And that was, I think, just last year. Which obviously has been reflected in the number of complaints that we've received. And I presume we are going to see a similar exercise again where these plans fail. You have said on some of those interventions where you've completed the actions that you have planned to take. It says complete, but it doesn't say what the results are. What has come out of it? And it'd be interesting to know. There's recently been, and it's been in the news, and it's been reported all over, this massive court case that you had where there was a judgment granted against the workman compensation. That judgment then wasn't adhered to. It appeared to have been ignored by the Department of Labor, and the previous commissioner somehow has been completely recalcitrant. And maybe you want to, as part of your plans, tell us what you're going to do about that, because it's shocking to hear that government has a judgment against it and completely ignored it. We've had lots of examples of that, but this is not the committee to talk about that, but there's a judgment which they crushed up, threw it into the waste, and then carried on with business. And I'd like to hear about how that fits into your plans. I do want to praise Mr. Mafata, who is the new groom, and he is sweeping clean, in the sense that the complaints that we have been sending of late, and maybe this is a taste of the development of the plan and the success of it, the complaints we have been putting in of late have been coming back answers. And so I've got to publicly praise him and say thank you very much. We also had him on national radio two nights ago, and the callers, and there were hundreds of callers, we plan to take a few, but hundreds of callers coming in on national radio, on SAFM, Mr. Mafata was very competent and willing to help every single individual. So again, DG, I want to praise you on this appointment of Mr. Mafata, so thank you very much for that. But maybe you could just tell us how you're going to translate paper into action. Thank you.
Thank you,
Thanks, Chair. Let me start on a lighter note by saying, Honorable Baker, it must not work when it has a bone on its mouth. You are indicating that you already tasted the pudding when people complain to others. Then coming to the question that I had, on slide 30, the pie chart there is reflecting that compensation payment was at 3.5%. I just want to check what is because of that. Is it because of a decrease in claims or is it a slow pace in payment? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I could just ask the DG, can you explain those months, August, September, October, November 2015, I think it is, when zero pensions, compensation, benefits, all medical payments were made? I mean, I could understand the drop, but zero, that was those graphs, zero. Did all the staff close offices for 3 or 4 months? Did the computer system break? Was it something that, I mean, I would really like to know why in the entire republic we've got no payments for 3 or 4 months. That's just, I'm shocked, actually. I'm not shocked that there's messes, I know it's historical, but it just closed off for 3 or 4 months. That just is shocking. Secondly, I do like this report. I like this report because you've tried to go into some detail and give us some real insights into what is going on and what you're trying to do to turn it around. So, actually, few are finished, and we see that there's some improvement, and we look at the times they're improving, and so on. But I would just request that in 6 months they bring us a results page or a results presentation, and they say, now we've achieved 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, then we can all, you know, congratulate them. But if we can get in 6 months' time the results of the compensation plan, we will know whether this is working in practice. And then my final comment is the only negative one I have, and that is whether the DG or the new commissioner or any of the officials of the compensation fund or even the department have been recently to the Eastern Cape to the places where people submit their applications for compensation benefits. But we're getting so many complaints from the Eastern Cape of documents going missing, and then the claim never gets finished, and then the person has to go back to the doctor or hospital and get another copy of the documents, and then get in a taxi and go to the Department of Labour to find where they submit the compensation on benefits, and then a month later the phone for, or they go to the office for progress. No, we don't have your application, the document is gone again. It's particularly bad in the Eastern Cape. Documents just keep going missing over and over and over, and the public are so angry. And I wonder if any of the people in this room have been recently to on-the-ground inspections and talked to the people in the queues, because documents in Eastern Cape are like, I don't know, they just keep going missing. Please, I'm appealing for the Eastern Cape's sake. It's not a dear territory, but I'm sincerely appealing for the sake of the public who are concerned. Thank you.
It's your home, Honorable Honorable Sanskalik.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm mostly covered by the previous speakers. I only have two other questions that I wanted to pose. We see all the activities and the progress made, and the majority of them has kicked off, and some, most of them has been completed. So my question would be, do I have timelines in place? Because we can have a process, but at some time you must say that at this stage, or this spiral state, I want to eradicate due to either backlogs and things like that, or I want to start afresh only on new things, or that you have timelines in place to deal with that. And I want to know what is the current state of affairs in terms of the staff morale and also the training on the systems that has been identified as a challenge. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair. Just to continue with where my colleague has concluded in terms of the implementation of the turnaround strategies, largely dependent upon the people who need to apply for the systems and other important set of components to implement this particular strategy. And as we know that it's general strategies sort of being sort of developed and implemented, it would require that a new approach towards the way we do things need to be followed. And people inherently, as the theory would suggest, are resistant to change. Now, it is comforting to know that on slide 26, we stated that the change management project to assess the impact on various interventions and develop a new framework of the fund is underway. And this process will be concluded by the end of this month. So the question is whether sufficient strategy, a new strategy has been developed in order to orientate the staff to implement the changes that is required of them, and that particular change management strategy, and what is that, and I can well imagine that it is it is not one particular strategy, it is multi-layered, and what is to be done with those employees who might be resistant to change, whether effective measures would be developed to bring them along to buy into this new strategy. And then lastly, as my colleague was saying, is that regularly report back would be welcome to judge the success of this turnaround strategy. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Honorable America. Over to you, TJ.
Thank you, Chair, and the Honorable Members. On the question raised by Honorable Member Bahrain, well, Chairperson, we're very committed in ensuring that what we're presenting to the committee is something that will be implemented. In fact, as indicated during the presentation, we have already started implementing the action plan. Also, as indicated in the presentation, we indicated that we developed the plan in June last year, and we have commenced with the implementation. And part of the improvements that Honorable Member Bahrain referred to are as a result of having implemented some elements of Islam. And I really appreciate the fact that he has taken notice of that. And it's seldom that as public servants we get to be commended for good work that we're doing, and I really appreciate that. And I think it spurs us on that we must deal with the challenges that are experienced at the Compensation Fund. Mr. Mapasa will deal with the issue relating to what happened to the 3 months or 4 that there was no payment. I want to talk to the issue relating to the judgment that the Honorable Member refers to. The judgment relates to an agreement that the previous commissioner had with a company called Comsol on how the outstanding claims were going to be processed. So that they then concluded a settlement agreement. And that settlement agreement was taken to court, and that agreement was made the order of the court. Subsequently to that, Comsol then approached the High Court and alleged that the commissioner has reneged on the implementation of that settlement agreement. The Compensation Fund defended the matter, and the judge ruled in favor of the Compensation Fund. So the matter then went to the Supreme Court of Appeals. Now, the judgment that has been handed out against the commissioner, the then commissioner, relates to the fact that the then commissioner did not file papers opposing the matter. Now, when I inquired, which is something that is still under investigation, when I inquired why were there no papers signed and filed, I was then informed that the legal counsel that was used by the Compensation Fund at the time to represent the commissioner submitted unsigned affidavits, unsigned documents, which were rejected by the court. Now, at this stage, I'm not at liberty to tell the committee why those papers were not signed. I've instructed legal services to investigate and find out why the papers were not signed. But this is a matter that comes as far back as 2009. We have since dealt with the issues that Consul raised, because they related to the pace at which the Compensation Fund was processing their claims. And as reflected in the presentation, with whatever claims that Consul now have, are new claims, which we are processing, and we have not processed their claims either as a result of the fact that there are outstanding documentation that we've asked them to send to us. And it's a shame with the deleted cases on our system as a result of the duplication. We've also informed them that we need documents so that we can process the claims. So that's where the matter comes from. Honorable Chairperson, with regards to the judgment. It is in no way a reflection on the Compensation Fund that as an institution we don't take what orders serious. We do. In fact, we have beefed up the legal section of the Compensation Fund, and also we have, as indicated in the presentation, made it a point that where the adjudication of claims is supposed to take place, it does take place. We have appointed people there now to make sure that things are adjudicated properly and on time. So we expect that as we go, as the times go on, the legal challenges that we're experiencing, they will go down, because we're improving the way in which we process claims. So we do have minor challenges, including the office that Honorable always referred to, the Eastern Cape. We have picked that up, Honorable Ollis, and we will be addressing this matter very soon, because it has to do with the manner in which decentralization was implemented, where the function was implemented, yet the number of people that you have there to perform the function do not correspond. So it's a matter that we are addressing, and it creates an impression that there is something wrong with decentralization. Yet decentralization is a good thing, because you want to make sure that the processing takes place closer to where claimants are. I think the commissioner will also deal with the issue of the compensation payments. Why is it at 3%? We will provide the committee with progress reports as and when the committee requires. If it's 6 months, we'll provide that progress report. Chairperson, we do have timelines. We have for the purpose of the presentation, we did not indicate the timelines, but we do have a document that talks to timelines. We can make the document available. I think it was part of the pack, wasn't it? Or it was not part of the pack. We'll include it, Chairperson, so that the committee members can see the timelines. We have a document which reflects the timelines. Yes.
Timelines for the consultants?
No.
For?
It's a timeline for all the initiatives and activities. Even though we indicated that we've broken them down into short term, long term, medium and long term. What we did not give you, Chairperson, is exact date and months as to when these things are supposed to happen. We do have that document here. We'll give it to the committee.
think that was the question. On the current state of affairs with regards to staff morale, we do our best, Chairperson, to improve staff morale. In fact, I think that the staff morale has improved drastically. I think Mr. Mafata can attest to that, and the new HR manager that we've just appointed, she has been interacting with staff. I think there's generally a degree of enthusiasm, and I think it has been brought about by the fact that issues that are raised by staff are given the necessary attention and have been addressed. I think that's the reason why morale has improved. But also, in coming up with this turnaround, I don't like to use a turnaround strategy because, you know, like honorable members have indicated, there have been so many turnaround strategies, and we'll start turning people around. We like to call it an action plan, because then what it says is that there are actions that must be taken, and we have planned to take those actions. In coming up with this action plan, we have involved the staff, we have involved the organized labor, and we have resuscitated the organized labor management, you know, meetings where we share you know, our plans with the organized labor. They raise their concerns, and we have taken them on board in everything that we're doing at the compensation fund. So there's I think the compensation fund is now a very live organization, and I think it's largely because they welcome the changes that we brought at the compensation fund, and they're looking forward to be part of the change. We've even indicated to them, in fact, we've indicated to them that when they raise the issue relating to system, because they operate the system, we said to them, in the enhancements that we are doing, we want them to be part so that they must inform the ICT solutions to the system's challenges that we have. And I think that also takes care of the question that was raised by Honorable America with regards to the change management. I think that having engaged a change management expert, we then started talking to staff. They are aware of the challenges that are confronting the funds, but they are also very much aware of the changes that we're bringing into the organization, and they welcome them. And you'll be surprised, some of them, they've indicated that they would love to be moved to certain sections because they think that they can add much more value when they've moved to those areas. So there's cooperation generally with regards to that. They've also raised the same issue that I think Honorable Van Schaak would raise, and you're also raising with regards to the development. They want to be exposed to training, and management is attending to that, and also issues relating to performance management and the implementation of the performance management system. They also raise those things that we have attended to and we continue to attend to. Well, those who are resisting change, we continue to talk to them because ordinarily, not everybody will agree with you, will agree with what you're putting on the table. But we are engaging with them, we're pointing out to them the reason why we're doing this as an organization and how they fit in our plans. And ultimately, if they don't want to be part of the change that is sweeping the organization, they will, at the end, they will have to find themselves a home where they will be comfortable, but would like to walk with them all the way because they are our employees and we value their contribution.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members. I'll respond to two questions. The first one is on the proportion of compensation benefits versus the other medical benefits as well as the pension. Now, the medical payments by the veterinary, I think medical expenses, it was indicated even in our last appearance in the committee that medical expenses are quite expensive. Medical care that we provide for the injured workers, we pay for a considerable period of time and we pay for expensive treatments. Hence, a large proportion of the benefits that we pay go towards medical payments. So what we pay for in compensation benefits is mainly where we, you know, the short, the lump sum payment that we make for temporary disablement or a person is permanently disabled for the short period where there's a loss of income. We then pay that amount. Hence, you find that medical payments are a bit higher, and then pension payments are also much higher because that is linked also to the salaries that the people would have been earning at the time when they had accidents at work. On the second thing, on the with regards to that gap in 2014-15 between August to October. Now, this was at the time when the fund was implementing a new claims management system, and the challenges at the time were widely publicized, where the deployment of the system resulted in a number of challenges that had to be resolved during that August-October period. However, the fund did, if you look at the payment trends across all benefits between November to February of the same financial year, the fund did make up for payments for those payments that had not had during August, September, October of the financial year. Thank you, sir.
No question. Did you refer to PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder? Can you elaborate on that? Who is in that committee? What do they do? Are they from inside or outside? Just tell me more about that. You call it a committee, the party said this, what
panel?
Task team.
Panel.
One of them panel.
Okay.
Just to elaborate a bit on the post-traumatic distress, post-traumatic disorder, we were experiencing challenges in terms of adjudicating on claims where there's post-traumatic stress disorder, and we're behind in terms of those claims. So that, and internally, we didn't have specialists who were going to assist us on that on those claims. So what we did, we requested constituents within our board to send us specialist names. In that committee, in that panel, we've got physiotherapists, we've got social workers, we've got general practitioners. It's about 10 members on that panel. What they are going to do, first of all, is to assist us on giving us advice on the claims where post-traumatic disorder is involved. And also to advise us in terms of policy. We want to develop a policy because we have realized that it's quite difficult to adjudicate because most of those things, they happen after maybe a long period. For example, a person was exposed maybe particularly in the correctional services, and then years later they get post-traumatic stress disorder. And you have to now get evidence that indeed, this particular incident contributed to this post-traumatic disorder. And then we need reports that someone who's a specialist, and also there's a psychiatrist there, can go through the report and advise the fund, and then we make decisions. That's why we were having this panel particularly.
Is this panel going to look at the nationally?
This
medical posts, that is clear in the provinces. How many?
In the provinces, we got medical posts for medical doctors, about 9 of them. And then we got about 56 for nurses. But their role is to adjudicate. Pre-authorized claims. Pre-authorization is similar to the medical aid industry where before a procedure or a treatment is given, then you get pre-authorization. So we want them to do those three on the ground. They are also going to do what we call case management, particularly on our pensioners. They have to, for instance, issue assistive devices, wheelchairs, prosthetic legs. We want them to go there and visit those pensioners and identify whether whatever we're giving them, they receive it, and whether they still exist. So that will be their role. But they will also adjudicate on post-traumatic distress issues. But where they reach a challenge, which is quite complex, because the reports can go for years, then they will refer this to this panel that we have appointed. Yes.
There are no questions. Now, this year I want to ask questions because you have promised us that in August, at least there will be a qualitative change to a certain extent in terms of the results. At this stage, you are still telling us about the plans, and we see, of course, that there are actions, there are results, but of course at this stage the results cannot be that much. You just started in, you just came in with your plan, and I think we're still following that plan. And I'm sure by the end, towards the end of the financial year, we'll be able to see whether the plan is working or the plan is not going to work. At this stage, I think things are still on the right track. Of course, it's not going to be easy, we know that, so I think we'll monitor the plan. And with those words, thank you for coming once more. And yes, I think for the department, CBP is adjourned. And we'll wait for 5 minutes to give you time to take yourself and the members. There is one item that you must give. So we can take the 5 minutes break. Thank you.
Members, can we then look at the 2 sets of minutes that we have, the minutes of the 7th of April and the minutes of the 18th, so we can start with 1 of the 7th. I do know that I've been told that the members have been sent this minute in advance. So any amendments that you want to make in the minute? Members. Honorable Bahrain, I propose. Honorable Shangwana.
I second the proposal.
The minutes of the 7th have been accepted. Minutes of the 8th. Thank you, Honorable Bahrain is proposing Honorable Fatalbe. The minutes have been adopted of the 7th and 13th of April. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.